Okay. Good evening, everyone. Sorry for the delay. And I've found an English translation of this. This is available in all farm stores. It's called Kol Do Di Do Fake. And it is the beginning of chapter 5 of Shir HaShirim. This is a class in Shir HaShirim in preparation for Pesach. We read Shir HaShirim on Pesach. The minhag is to read it on Shabbos Chol Hamoed Pesach, which we will do here, as many shows across the world will be doing. And religious Zionist tendency, whether you are for or against, is based on the readings of this 8th chapter book. On the face of it, it really does not look like it belongs in the Bible. Right? It's a love story between a lovesick man and a lovesick woman who tragically are never in love with each other at the same time. Right? Now, from the very outset, remember I gave you a homework assignment last week to read Yechezkel 16. It's like Shir HaShirim, but it's not like Shir HaShirim. It's like Shir HaShirim in that it's the whole chapter is a parable. There's he makes it very clear. The parable is about a man who finds a basket with a newborn baby in it that was left by its mother. And it's clearly a man who starts off as a father figure. He washes the baby, he swaddles the baby, he cleanses, he even cuts the umbilical cord. That's how young this child is. And he takes care of the baby, he nurtures the baby, feeds the baby, or the baby grows into a beautiful, beautiful woman. And look, the relationship, obviously, if it's a stepfather, it's a little, creepy that he becomes now like the beloved of this woman. But it's of course God who starts off as our loving father, Banim Atem, right, L'Hashem. But the relationship is meant to evolve from a parent-child relationship where the child needs to be disciplined and patched and think about our time in the desert, right? Think about constant sinning and God has to punish us and he exiles us to a what's more linear relationship where it's meant to be Ve'erastich li la'olam, Ve'erastich li b'tzedek v'mishpat v'chesed v'racham. That God says, I want this relationship to be reciprocal. We say this, we put on the tefillin. Listen to the words carefully. You give God justice and righteousness, and God will give you chesed and rachman. God will give you mercy. So it's meant to be a reciprocal relationship. I'm told you to be more responsible, right? So this is the evolving relationship between the one who finds this newborn baby, right, and the one who nurtures it to growth, and she turns into a ravishing, beautiful woman. And when she becomes a beautiful woman, she rejects the man who did all that for her. Right? So you did the homework? Okay, that's Yechezkel 16. And so Shir HaShirim reads similarly so that you would, of course, not consider it to be worthy to be in the Bible if it's just a love story between a man and a woman. Twice they run up and down each other's bodies, not missing much from head to toe, describing all of the good points of the other's body, and each one is meant to be symbolic of something in the relationship. All right. So the tragedy of Shir HaShirim is do you know where the Tanakh are in that closet? There are a bunch of them. Maybe you can start to give some out. Right? Yeah, right in there. The tragedy of the relationship is that they can't seem to be in love at the same time. Wow. So what would be where the man loves the woman so much and he describes her so lovingly, but she's not interested in him? That would be when God sends us prophets to get us to repent and return to the proper path. But we're not listening. We didn't listen to Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel. We didn't listen early on when it was still, you know, can still avoid the fate. And we didn't listen when it was too late. Okay. We're going to start with Shir Hashirim chapter 5, verse 2. You'll find it on page 1692. Okay, it starts, we're starting with Ani Yesheina V'Libi Er. Why I'm starting with verse 2 has to do with a bishop in the 13th century who divided the book, the chapters of Tanakh into chapter numbers, right? I don't know what made him start here with chapter 5, verse 1. That's a conclusion of the previous song, so to say. Do you remember, Shir HaShirim has 8 chapters. That's an arbitrary number that Bishop Langton gave. But it does have 5 songs. Remember what the significance of that number? Remember it says in Malachim that Shlomo wrote 1,005 songs. This is the best one. 1,005, isn't that strange? So remember there's a pasuk at the end of this book called that says Ha'elef Lecha Shlomo. So it's praising the 1,000 songs that he wrote. But these 5 represent something special in Shlomo's life. God appeared to Shlomo 5 times. The last one was devastating. The last one is where he rebukes him for all of his trespasses. This man who built the temple and made such incredibly beautiful speeches. The most beautiful prayers in the Bible are Shlomo's when he built the Beis HaMikdash. And yet this man allowed idolatry. So God's last speech to him is the last song where the man tells the woman, just wait for me. Essentially saying, don't call for me until I call for you. And this is the basic structure of the Rav's. The Rav was dealing with this in the, you know, in the 40s, 50s, where the state of Israel was just emerging. Right? The Jewish community and the yeshiva world was not, you know, had a lot of different positions on religious Zionism, right? The Rav, for his part, did not say a bracha for Medinas Yisrael that it is racist tzmichat geulateinu. Right? He thought it was jumping the gun to say reshit tzmichat geulateinu. The state of Israel, he said, may be some kind of harbinger for our aspirations for redemption and salvation. He understood as well as anybody how different Jewish history would be if we had it in 1938 than 1948, right? But to say that the state of Israel is even the reshit means the first, smichat, look at all these caveats, smichat means sproutings of our redemption. It's not sproutings of the redemption. There may be many of those. This is just the first one, right? So how would you remember? He didn't say...
No.
Maybe also, he would say shittahay, maybe?
No. But also, he had this thing, he was opposed to writing new prayers and all together. So in my mind, we didn't even say the prayer for the government. Mm-hmm. You just had that, he didn't believe in...
It shouldn't be part of a prayer liturgy.
Right, with any... The legitimate mm-hmm. set by Isaacus Golan. That's it. We don't add.
What about Lechadodi? You say that?
No, we did. I guess it said that sanctum, but to write a specifically write a prayer. That was accepted by the community. He just was opposed to it. So it's hard to know, given a different position, what position it was that triggered his. Yeah, with opposition to it.
Like, I remember hearing from him. I was in the ship 2 years with the Rav. I remember hearing from him that it might be arrogant on our part.
No, but he also felt, and I meant to bring it, he felt he had had a third way between the Haredim. We thought we were ignoring the fact that this was, again,
some mistake. Kind of knock.
It was a knock from God. And like the Cookian view of it being messianic. He wanted a third way that it was.
So let's read chapter 5, and then we'll see. Now, remember, we are... The man is God, the woman is Israel.
Right?
The woman is Israel, is the nation of Israel. if they meet and consummate their love, that's the redemption. Okay, but they never meet. What could be more tragic than remember that last scene in Dr. Zhivago when he sees her and he dies before he gets off the bus. Remember, and he sees her after all that time, and he finally runs after her, but he dies, and she never knows that. Okay, I'm just putting it out there. All right, so here we are. Aniya Sheina, she's talking. Right? They go back and forth from him talking to her talking. Right? So she's sleeping, Vili be air, but what does it mean? Like she's daydreaming and night, you know, when you come to bed, you hopefully will fall asleep right away if you're very tired. Right? But everybody thinks a little bit about something, maybe something you're gonna do the next day, maybe think about how I'm going to start my drasha in the morning, or how my shears are going to go, or you know. But it's a good if you can, you know, I sleep with a piece of paper and pencil right near my bed, because I have to sometimes write down what I thought about. And, okay, so it whether or not she's actually sleeping, but she says my heart is awake. I think it's simplest is that she's actually in bed. In that pre-falling asleep time where you're thinking about how your day was, and you know, that's why it's always best before going to sleep to don't watch a horror film, you know, don't listen to, you know, calm music, and you won't have trouble falling asleep. All right, you have good conscience is the best pillow. All right, so she says, my heart is awake, maybe be air, cold do di do fake. All right, there's not a lot of time for her to fall asleep, because there's a knock at the door. The knock is my beloved's voice. And she calls him my beloved, but she's not acting like it, because he says, this is what he tells her, Pischili achosi rayasi yonasi tamasi. These are just terms of endearment. My sister is, there are those who say, because in ancient times, royalty married their sisters. That's nonsense. You know, it's like that song in the 60s, Love Your Daddy with All Your Might, right? Who's your daddy? What is that? That's not an incestuous song. That's just, you know what I'm saying? So it's just a term of endearment. It says, come, wake up my sister, my beloved, my friend, you know. Okay. Yonasi, my dove. He says, you know, love dove, you know, all right. It's you get it. It's these are terms of endearment. Each one might represent some other aspect of the relationship, but that's taking this share a little too far. Shiroshi nimla tol kutsosai resise laila. You know, the anims and miros is all taken from Shira Shira, right? So you recognize these words from anims and miros, right? So he says, wake up for me, wake, open the door for me. My hair is all wet from the rain. That seems to be a minor point. Who cares if it's raining or not? He wants to get in the room. And if she opens the door for him, then that's our redemption. Right? God gave us, came so close. Right? So why is it raining outside? What's the image of the rain? It's almost always like that. But
cheers?
It could be. I think it's something simpler than that.
Sorry.
No, there's a very thoughtful sustaining elements, the Gemara in the beginning of Tainus, of course. I think it's something simpler. I think it's just that I wanted so much to be here that the rain didn't keep me away.
But it says Tom. Oh,
that's true. Like,
Tom, too. It could be that it's early morning.
It's like maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe he won't sleep as well.
Oh, he certainly couldn't sleep.
Exactly.
Yeah. The
middle of the night.
And the rain did not stop me. You see, no, there's a pasuk in Mishlei. The lazy man says there's a lion outside. So he's making excuses. But if there's really a lion on your front door, porch and someone wants you to come out and meet him, that's a good excuse. You know, I'm going to get eaten up if I come out and meet you. So why is Mishlei calling him lazy? Right? And if there's no lion there and he's making it up, he's not lazy. He's a liar. He's a Russia. So which is it? So the Mefarshim prefer there is a lion there, Only if he really wanted to get out, if he had tickets to the World Series, he'd jump out the back of the window and make his way to where he wanted to go. He's making excuses. He has an excuse. I have a flat tire. But if you really wanted to get where you had to go, you'd get there. You take the train. You take an Uber. You know,
it's a dream, minor hindrance, as if it were one.
So the rain is the relatively minor hindrance.
Right.
But he said, but there's a much less of a minor hindrance that's about to keep her from right. consummating this relationship, which is, take a listen, take a look at the next pasuk. Right? So it doesn't even say, and so I said, remember, this is told from her standpoint. It says, I have removed my shirt, my day shirt. In a minute. I'm not wearing my day clothes. Echachoyel bashenu. You want to put the clothes back on? Rochatzti esraglai. You know, I think this pasuk has the echalashon on purpose because this is like the saddest pasuk in Tanakh. Mm. Look how close we are. Look how close. They just get out of bed and answer the door. He's there. And you're making up excuses that you have your night clothes on and the floor is muddy. I know it's raining. The floor is muddy. And if I washed my feet before coming to bed, and if I go answer the door, my feet are going to get muddy again. Right? I'm not going to get tinuf, means I'm going to get dirty. So this is the sense. We've been called, the call to come home, right? So the religious Zionist looks at this as, you know, you had so many chances to go. Right, you know, whether it's this is early Zionist movements or whatever, but or maybe with Ezra, when Ezra called the Jews to come back in, after the Persians let them go, after Cyrus invited them, remember the number? How many out of every 100 Jews at that time came back to Israel?
You said one.
One. One in 100. 99 out of every 100 Jews chose to stay out of Israel. That's staying in bed and not answering the door. Okay, you hear it? Okay, how can I? Come on, I'm so comfortable here. Our night clothes are symbolic of, I have a home in the French Riviera, I have a home in the mountains, I have a ski lodge, I'm going to give up all that. I have 2 weeks vacation in Paris every year, I've got my ski vacation in Vail. I got to give up all that to just be in Israel and the hardships there. Right, so no, I'll tell you another time. Come back another time, right? But so he could have just said, "Okay, goodbye. I'll come back another time." You're right. Let's see when I come back. Right.
The first Yemenite Aliyah was a tough freshman bed, 1882, and they also took the passage from Shirashirim, Amalti Elebe Tamar.
Tamar, yeah, yeah.
And that's the name of this Aliyah.
Mm-hmm.
Elebe Tamar.
Yeah. So what happened here is that he's not taking no for an answer right away. He wants to get in. So what does he do? You can maybe imagine these doors here. So it's locked from inside. So he pushes his hand. He gets through that glass in order to put his hand through and open it up. Look at the next pasuk.
Mm-hmm.
Dodi shalach, she's telling this story. Dodi shalach yado min hachor, umeyai hamu alav. Dodi, my beloved, put his hand through the door, and he tried to open it, and I saw the hand of God. You get it? I saw the hand. So now she's like, he's serious. Right? Maybe I have to start reevaluating my refusal. Right? So if you put his hand through the door like that, I've got to give more thought. Does the terminology "Me'ai Hamu'alav" sound familiar? Where does it come from?
It's not from
Yirmiyahu, the Haftorah of the second day Rosh Hashanah, and it's one of the psukim in.
It's not. I know it's
Zichronos in Rosh Hashanah. Haben Yakir Le'Ephraim Im Yelad Shashuim. Right. That's the last pasuk of the Haftorah, second day Rosh Hashanah. Right?
Although if Shlomo wrote this, then you wouldn't have known that.
No, of course, Yirmiyahu takes it from here. Oh. I submit to you, and I Trust me, I looked it up. There's only two times these terminologies appear in the whole Tanakh. Here in Yirmiyahu Lamed Aleph. But it gets better. There's another thing that Yirmiyahu Perek Lamed Aleph, where he predicts that the Jews will, be a calling to come back. Right? This is where they're just leaving. Yirmiyahu's mission was not to prevent the Churban, not to prevent the destruction of the nation, not to prevent the sacking of Jerusalem, not to prevent the killing of the king. If those were any of his missions, he was a miserable failure. Those were set in motion already.
Mm-hmm.
It was practically impossible to avoid any of those. Yirmiyahu's mission was to plant within them the hopes that 70 years after these things happen, you will return. And you will rebuild this temple. So Yirmiyahu predicts that I'm worried that you're not going to return in good numbers. There's a reason for this. I've told you in different settings, and I want to get moving because I really want to go through some of these sources. There's a reason for that is because Yirmiyahu begged them to surrender to the Babylonians. He says, I have a good authority that within even 50 years from now, 70 years from when Nebuchadnezzar became king 20 years ago, he's going to be wiped out by the Persians. Yirmiyahu even named him Cyrus. And indeed, exactly 70 years from Nebuchadnezzar's first year, Cyrus destroyed the Babylonians. And when that happens, the Persian kings will be kindly disposed towards you. They will let you return. And more Jews will return, not just from Yehuda, but from the 10 lost tribes, if there is a constant Jewish presence in Israel. And if you surrender, the Babylonians will allow hundreds of thousands of you to remain all over Israel. They'll put you to confiscatory taxation. They'll make slaves of you. But you'll be in your homes. You'll be in your own places. You'll have the temple. Right? And they didn't. They thought that was a surrender. They thought it was feeding into the enemy. They accused him of treachery. Right? They put him in the stocks. He spent most of the end of the last years before Churban in jail. And they fought valiantly and they made a siege. They besieged for 2 years. They were very angry and they wiped out everything and took practically everyone away. But they allowed Yirmiyahu to remain, which could have maintained his prophecy that Jews will return when Cyrus lets you come back. They said, Yirmiyahu, we heard you wanted to make peace with us. You can stay with the community. And some tens of thousands remained with Gedaliah as their governor that Yirmiyahu appointed. And strike two, they killed him too. Right? And then the Babylonians carried off practically everyone else. And incredibly, they still allowed Yirmiyahu to remain with the community. Now it's just a few thousand Jews. And they forcibly took him to Egypt. That was it.
Right, the
Jews forcibly took Yirmiyahu to Egypt, where they suffered another Churban because the tornado followed in Egypt afterwards. So then by that time, there were so few Jews left in Israel. Returning when Cyrus invited them to could have been like going back to Israel in 1870 or 1970. Right? You know the difference between those two. Right?
Yeah,
okay, you know what the Aliyah was like in 1882. It was not very pleasant. But it could have been where the Jews were living there all that time, tending to the ground. By the time they came, the ground was a rock. No one wanted to come, so they all remained in Chutzlar. It's 99 out of 100. So this is a very sad part, that they chose to stay in bed. Right? So, but he puts his hand through the door. So when she sees the hand, he's serious. She rushes out of bed. Let's read the next pasuk. Dodi shalach yedo min achor, meyai hamu alav. Kam te'ani liftoach ledodi. V'yodai natfu mor, v'etz posai mor over al kapos hamanul. So what happened was, since she expected to be in bed for so long, right, she bought a lot of villas, she bought a lot of properties. That's, I think, is indicative of the myrrh that's in her hair. Because what happens, it runs down her shoulders, it runs down her hands, and she can't grip the door to open up for him. And it takes her too long to unlock the door because she's got so stuck in her obstinance of remaining in bed, remaining in the comforts of this, of not opening the door for her beloved. So by the time she answered the door, Patachti Ani LeDodi, our hearts are pounding. Oh my goodness, she is opening the door. But it's not there anymore. Here's another interesting thing I saw with the concordance. You see that word, Dodi Chomak Avar? It's a very rare word in the Tanakh. It's not a hapax legomena. You know what that means, right? Because it appears twice in the Bible. The verse, just a few before he says, Aben Yakir Ephraim, Yirmiyahu says, Ad Masai Tischamakin. How long will you be chamak, all you Jews, meaning remaining in Chutz Laretz? I think that Yirmiyahu is accessing chapter 5 of Shir HaShirim when he's complaining about a sort of a prophecy about the people not returning. If you were in shul this past two Shabbos, is when I gave the Esther shir. It's Megillas Esther is really like a parody written like a satire to show us why the Jews didn't return. They got so comfortable in Chutz Laretz.
Why do you keep returning, talk about returning to, you make that to a nationalist thing as opposed to religious, returning to God without regard to the territory?
It's symbolic, it's a metaphor.
But just as much as this can be a metaphor of getting out of bed and going, crossing the ocean, so to say, to Israel, it could be getting out of bed and returning to God. So I would say that Yirmiyahu 31 is the conduit, because Yirmiyahu 31 is the Haftorah for Rosh Hashanah for a good reason, but at its core it's v'shavu banim l'gvulam, words that appear in that Haftorah.
Right. Also, the covenant is always the land is
right. So it's one and the other. You can't have the land without Torah. You can't have and the Torah without the land is also missing somewhat because there's so many mitzvahs.
The bris with Avram is the land is part of the mitzvahs. It's an integral part of Judaism.
Right. So the Haftorah of Rosh Hashanah chooses its source. Every Navi talks about tshuva, but its source is a prophecy about the return to Israel. Okay, so Nafshi Yotzo B'Dabro B'Kashtiu V'lo Mitzosiu. Now, Nafshi Yotzo B'Dabro, Chazal take to refer to the experience of Klal Yisrael at Mount Torah. Right? Nafshi Yotzo B'Dabro, and Hashem had to revive them. It's a big towel.
Yeah.
This is the pasuk the Gemara quotes.
That's the opposite.
B'Kashtiu V'lo Mitzosiu V'lo Anani. It's so she said, you know, she sees that he's not at the door. He was just here a second ago. So what do you do? Go out and look for him. But wait a second. Remember, she just said she's wearing nightclothes. This is not the way a woman shouldn't walk out with a nightclothes. She's going to get molested by the guards, which is exactly what happens to her in a few psukim. She gets molested.
Where is that metaphor?
I think the metaphor is our that it's the metaphor that the Muslims and the Christians apply to us is that you've sinned against your God, so exile is your everlasting punishment. Which, of course, the state of Israel is some kind. You know, Rav wrote about.
Yeah, it's in
the state of Israel is like a bone in the throat of the Vatican and others.
Well, that's why I saw it meaningful when John Paul he put up note. In the
Kotel.
It was extremely meaningful symbolic.
Okay.
Because it was validating the temple.
So the point is that the search outside in the street is, you know, I can't believe all I had to do was get out of bed and answer the door. And now I've got to run through this chapter, the middle of chapter 5, this could be the last 2,000 years. And all of the pain and suffering and the molestation, if you will, and blood libels and pogroms and inquisitions and crusades and other things like that, that was suffering in the street. Now, however, the watchmen do ask, why, what are you looking for in these night clothes? What's your, you know, what's your mission here? Why did you leave your house? So here is where she now describes the beloved, and I have to go up and down his body, but she goes, you know, his shoulders, his chest, his thighs, his belly, his,
like,
you know,
it's crazy, right?
No, but those all mean, you know, some other different metaphors. And then when the watchmen hear her describe this, they berate her. They say, you, with all those descriptions, if you believe in those things, why didn't you answer the door? So they say, I'm sorry, I'm skipping a long time because I really want to get to this, these quotes. Look at the beginning of chapter 6 where they say, Ana halach dodecha yafa banashim. Ana pana dodechu nevakshenu imach.
But this is the Shomrim who's saying?
The Shomrim are saying, where did he go? Come, let us look for him with you. Mm-hmm. So I think we can explain this as a function of the movement of religion to put morality at the center of their the underpinnings of their religion. In other words, before Christianity and Islam, morality was not part of any religion outside of Judaism. Really, you're going to say, oh, you're being parochial. No, the fact is that the gods that the pagans worship, the gods that the Romans, Greeks, whatever the Philistines, the gods themselves, as they are depicted by their own worshipers, are sorely lacking in morality. They're jealous of each other. They steal from each other. They use their power to take from each other. And the chief god of Canaan is called Baal Chamod, Chet Mem Dalet, because his whole essence is to sometimes for the good of orphans and widows, but his essence is to perform his will, to covet whatever he feels he wants, and to take it. Achab's wife was just behaving like a good Sidonite by getting her husband the vineyard. Remember the story, of course, mm-hmm. the vineyard of Naboth. She was just doing what a good Sidonite is going to do. So if you've studied, look, I've studied 105, ancient civilizations, and their gods are not moral. But Christianity and Islam decided, you know, we're going to have, well, Judaism, but Avram was not the first monotheist. There were Egyptian monotheistic monarchs before that.
That's true.
They were just not moral. So Avram, we say Avram's vision is to bring to publicize a moral monotheistic religion to the world.
That's a two-edged sword, though, because ethics end up replacing religion that they took back before a movement.
That's true, too. So that's our understanding, is that this is moral because Akash Barbu says it. Because that's our assumption, is that. I know that you can play around with that, too. And that's why I can choose, let's say, a Ramban over a Rashi in interpreting, let's say, the mitzvah of Kibush Haaretz or something like that. You know, and it's, you know, I'm sitting on the shoulders of others. Is it proper of me to say the reason why I prefer this Ramban has to do with moral underpinnings? Okay, what could I say? Living in a time where I get to do that.
No, but that's excerpt from the Rabbi. Gullus and crime, but yeah. Ethic being experiences in order to break that ethical,
of course,
foundation.
Right. Okay, so now Shir HaShirim also has three psukim, three verses that are mamish, a repeated for exactly three verses throughout the book. There's the fourth one that looks a little like it, but it veers off a little bit. Do you say it every Friday night?
Yes,
you grew up, right?
Yeah, I grew up. No, we were half.
So, Hitzvati etchem.
It's Vaoto by Lokas Adeh, in Tahir, in Tobaruot, Alvats.
So it's in the exact same pasuk three times. And the Gemara at the end of Maseches Ksuvos has this as the makor for something known as the three oaths. Cause three oaths. So I would start from the outset and say, not everybody considers that what I'm about to tell you is halacha.
It's agadah.
It's agadah, these three oaths, right. But here they are. But there are whole Hasidic movements and whole, even in some places in the yeshiva world, and certainly here in New York, there was a meeting that took place on the Lower East Side in the 1890s about whether this new thing called Zionism, this, you know, I'm sure they thought about this Yemenite community and the others, whether we should support them and whether we should even consider publicizing the idea that it's time to go back to Israel and it's a good thing to do. And they determined, no, it's not good because of these three oaths. Hear them. Here they are. One, lo yimredu bagoyim. Do not rebel against the nations. Do not start a political movement in Israel where Jews are in charge if doing so is against the will of the nations. Not against every Gentile in the world, because you're never going to have that. But the will of the nations, and we might have to identify what that is, and historically, if that ever took place. But I will tell you this, the Meshech Chochma of Meir Simcha of Dvinsk, who was no Zionist, felt that the Balfour Declaration letter from the King of England satisfied that oath. Because the one who had the mandate to control that land considered that His Majesty views with favor, and that favor was supposed to be all of Israel, greater Israel, and all of Jordan. Right? Jordan, which Jordan was 78% of the whole. Okay, the whole Jordan, you know, with the horn at the back. Okay, so and certainly, the Meshech Chochma didn't live that long, but certainly the UN proclamation of November 29th, 1947 should suffice. Mm-hmm. Right? Only the full Arab bloc in Cuba voted against. But certainly the fact that the United States and Russia could agree on this and all other nations besides the ones I just mentioned would seem to satisfy that oath.
In the past, like 2/3 majority.
Yeah. Oath number two, lo ya'ale al hachoma. Do not start a political movement in Israel until God calls for you, ad shetechbatz, until I show you that I want it. That's how the book ends. Barach dodi, you know, stay, don't call me, I'll call you when I'm ready. You didn't come to the door to answer when I called on you. All right, now wait for me.
Right. Is that part of military campaign? Or Hamas suggests more than just like forcing
it? Yeah, so Loyal al-Hama is apparently, even if the Gentiles of the world allow you to return, it cannot be done in a way that defies the will of God. God has to call you to do so. Ostensibly, God will only call you to do so if doing so is not going to get you into hot water with the guy. But whether or not God calls us, I guess, can be interpreted in different ways by different people. So on this, I ask you, just look in the back here. You see in the back there's some handwriting on this? Mm-hmm. So this is you see the name of the book is right in the middle there, Eim HaBanim Smecha. Does that ring a bell to anybody?
Yeah.
Eim HaBanim Smecha was a Satmar Rebbe, a Satmar Chosid named Yisachar Teichtel. He was in the camps. The Satmar Rebbe, Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum, was whisked out of Europe in time. But Yisachar Teichtel, Yisachar Teichtel was in the camps, and he somehow put a lot of thoughts together of scraps of paper, and he took notes, and he retrieved a lot of this after the war, and he wrote this book called Eim HaBanim Smecha, which is studied in the Zionist yeshivas. If you saw a picture of both, I should have them both in my office. Picture of both of them, they look both extremely venerable, both the same long white beards, and they look. He couldn't tell which one is the Rebbe and which one is the Chassid. But so his book draws almost polar opposite conclusions of what the Satmar Rebbe draws from the 20th century. It's really uncanny, I mean, about the Holocaust and Zionist adventures, you know, in the 1800s and 1900s. And the Satmar Rebbe would be against, would consider Loyal al-Hama is not a function of the fact that the early governments of Israel were antithetical to religion and you know, gave certain you know, salutes to Shmir Shabbos a little here and there, and 400 people studying Torah or something like that. But they it's not a function of the fact that it's not run according to Halacha. The Satmar would be against the state of Israel even if it was run 100% according to the Halacha. Right, and the Turi Karta, who are like violent about this, are not against living in Israel. They're against Jews being in charge of Israel. If they could deliver Israel to Iran tomorrow, they would. They travel to Iran and they give humanitarian awards to the president of Iran and to the Ayatollah. And they,
but Rabbi, since when you learn Halacha from Agada? That's what I don't get.
How are you so sure that this is Agada? Let the Rambam decide that this is Agada. I know.
The Rambam doesn't bring it.
I could agree with you. It's not, but there are the poskim who have this discussion feel that it is Halacha.
And it's Agada. Mm-hmm.
Who counted as Halacha?
I agree with you on this. I know they don't. Okay. They don't cite it. It's not brought down in their texts.
So that's my point. I mean, that's what I don't.
I
get.
Started the discussion by saying, "Your call." Yes. So here is. So on this is what I wanted to show you. We have 12 more minutes. Here is. You see here. I wrote down the three oaths. You see it. So I only mentioned two of the oaths because the third one goes on the Goyim. Third oath is on the Goyim. And we say, well, how does God allow himself to give an oath to the Goyim? Why should they keep up? Well, it means that if the Goyim don't keep their oath, we don't have to keep ours. Anyone remember what the Goyim's oath is?
They'll be too harsh.
Don't be too harsh on us while we're keeping our oath. So you can forgive the Jews in 1948 for thinking that the Goyim didn't keep their oath. All right. But here is what and to answer your question of historically before. You see the three psukim. It says 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 4, 5, 6. You see that? 7, 8, 9, 7, 8, 9. Yeah. Okay. It's just continuations, right? The text is 1 and 1. The Targum is 2 and 2. Rashi is 3 and 3. Right. Well, I'm just going to do the Targum. The Targum to these three oaths, instead of taking the Gemara's line of what the three oaths are, instead says that they signify three different times in Jewish history. What is that? Is that God called for a redemption at a specific time, and if you tried to go ahead of that time, if you try to rush that time, you hear the Maher Takeitz. So that is what the result of this meeting here in the 1890s on the Lower East Side. They said that to join along with Zionism is a failure because it is the Maher Takeitz. And my presentation to you here in these waning moments of this year is to prove why they were wrong. The first one is the descendants of Ephraim. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You hear of this Agada? That some descendants of Ephraim made the Cheshbon that the 400 years were over 30 years early? That's the reckoning of the 400 years and the 430 years. It's 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak, 430 years from the... Right, those are the bones of Yechezkel. Right. So it says in this Targum that the Bnei Ephraim were doomed to failure because they rushed the redemption. Now, the second one is the people in the desert after God told them that they were supposed to spend 40 years because of their reaction to the scouts, 10 scouts. And then God says, you're going to die here. And then they took up arms and said, no, we made a mistake. We changed our mind. Right? Okay. The fact that they went, even though God told them not to, is a sign why God didn't forgive them, because their tshuva wasn't real. I think had they, I mean, like, I can only think, but I'm surmising that had they put down their arms and say, God, you're right, we want so badly to go into Israel, we realize our mistake, we're in your hands. And Hashem would say, okay, you know what? All right, willing to listen. I relent on my...
They're doing the same thing, just in reverse.
The only consistent thing is that they just disobey God, whatever he says. When Yeshayahu says, don't make peace, the king wants to make peace. Right. When Yirmiyahu says, make peace, the king went to war. So the second oath is, I cause you to take an oath to remain here in the desert until I call for you. It's going to be 40 years. Right? So now I'm going to, last week I told you like a little pilpul. I'm going to tell you another pilpul now on this second oath. They were supposed to spend 40 years in the desert, right? Mm-hmm. Why? Because they traversed the land for 40 days. Mm-hmm. Right? But they didn't spend 40 years in the desert. They spent 40 years minus 15 days. Because they went into the desert on the 15th of Nisan. They went into Israel on the 10th of Nisan. And the 11 days it was supposed to count to go anyway, it says in the beginning of Dvarim, it was supposed to take 11 days to get into Israel. That shouldn't count either, because that was understood. So here is a pilpul based on Rashi. Rashi says that when the scouts left Israel, it says, Vayelchu Vayavou. They went and they came. So Rashi writes, this shows that the Meraglim were Rishaim from the moment they left. Ma Bia Bechet Af Halicha Bechet. Okay. That's contradicted by Rashi saying when they left, it says Kulam Anoshim Roshei Beisavosam. So Rashi says Anoshim Lashon Chashivus Ki Ba'osa Sha'a Tzadikim Hayu. At that moment, they were still Tzadikim. Rashi, make up your mind. Were they Rishaim from the minute they left, or they were or not? Mm. So here's the diuk. They were Tzadikim for 1 hour. Now, hold on. If one day is 1 year, right? Right? 40 days, 40 years. Mm-hmm. Right? 24 hours is 12 months. Right? How many hours is 1 month? 2 hours. How many hours is 15 days? 1 hour. Osa sha'a ksherim hayu. Because they were ksherim for 1 hour, they got 15 days out of off of their 40 years, as I explained 5 minutes ago. Okay, that's just a little pilpul. Now, what would be the third oath? So this meeting said, that's today. If we went to Israel today and started this whole Zionist mishmash before God calls on us, we'd be violating one of the oaths and we'd be rushing the case. This is not a good idea. They cited even a Rashi. Rashi on the Pasuk says the Plishtim were especially scared of us because they were the ones who killed those B'nai Ephraim that you said were the bones later that were revived. Right? So they said, if Rashi wrote that, it must be that we have to stay away from Zionism. It's a failure. Let's not get into it. So the third Targum is on the time of Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu said return after 70 years. There were those who said it will be less than 70 years. That would fail. Yirmiyahu said, chapter 29. Remember Hananya ben Azur with the yoke, the wooden yoke that he smashed. And he says, Kocha Shavarti is old Bavel. It's not going to be 70 years like he said. That means we're not returning and even our children won't return. 2 years, everything, the Kalim will return and we're all going to Babylonians will be vanquished. So, Yirmiyahu told him that you're weakening us. People love to hear 2 years. Yeah, of course they love to hear that more than 70 years. But you're weakening us. And we, in this way, Yirmiyahu establishes the rule of prophecy. He says, you know what? If we do return after 2 years, that's not a sign that I'm a liar, because God always loves to change a bad decree and make it better. But if you know when he's going to be, when you know when he's a liar, is when 2 years pass and we don't return. Then you know he's a liar. So that the third oath is that if you came in the time of Yirmiyahu and you came before the 7 years were over, it would be devastating, because God told you three times. And the fourth time, which is now, we were not told how long. So that's the Chassam Sofer says that that's why at the Seder we try to do Maisim Tovim, Kol Dichpin, Yisei V'Yechol, and the Shana Abba. We can force the case. All right, the two characters agree with that. They'll agree that, yeah, we should do as many mitzvahs as possible, and that's how we'll bring the case. But by having government officials and a Knesset, that's not how you bring the case.
Yeah, that's a misunderstanding of Zionism. First of all, Herzl tried, he always pushing for a charter recognized in the international law. It's the opposite of rebelling against the claim. And second of all, he wasn't intended to bring up Google. It's just a political movement.
Yeah.
So it doesn't fit into the ethos.
He wanted to have a place that's safe for Jews to escape when the Dreyfus case comes on. He was covering the Dreyfus case. So I'm just going to close with the six knocks. One. In the political arena, the Rav felt that the fact that the East and the West, represented by Russia and America and China, and was in agreement, and that the only dissent was in the Arab world, and okay, Cuba. The Rav felt that the UN was created for this purpose.
Well, actually, it's really the first major issue that they dealt with. So they're praying in 45, and this is 47.
Yeah, there's a Bracious Rabbi that talks about sometimes there's rain for just one blade of grass. So the whole UN, because it was just at the beginning of its inception, this was their first action. Okay, the next knock was he felt the battlefield miracle of 1948, and certainly 67 and 73. He lived to see both of those. But he felt that the miracle of 1948, because there were many people who said, no, we cannot declare statehood. We're going to get wiped out afterwards. The nations, six nations just converged on us. And within just a few months, listen to this terrible statistic, the equivalence of America losing 3.5 million soldiers in a few months. Can you imagine a number like that? All the soldiers who died in the 10-year Vietnam War were 50,000. That's a terrible number also. But 3.5 million soldiers in a few months. That's the percentage of the Israeli population that was killed in 48 months. Nisim and Niflaos about how they held on to in Tzfas and in Malcha and all these places all over. Just one person holding off a whole arm. And just amazing stories. And the Rav felt that cannot happen without the knocks of Hashem. He thought theology, that against the sort of the new Israel of Christianity and Islam. Islam claimed to be, you know, God's favorite nation now also, that this was a knock from Hashem saying that the idea that the Jew has to remain in exile for punishment for refusing Muhammad or refusing Jesus is an important theological.
So the Satmar and the Catholic Church have the same thing.
So he said the central axiom of Christian theology is shattered. Right? He refers to Dulles, the. Bilum.
Yeah. Well, no, he says because the Jew, the Muslim, absolute Jews, because they killed their prophet, their. Right. And obviously, it's not the case. It's trajectory.
At the UN, he said that the Greeks hate Jews because he killed Mohammed. The Arabs hate Jews because they killed Mohammed. So he was a deacon, the Episcopalian deacon, the Secretary of State. Finally, 4, 5, and 6 is that the perplexed youth. After the Holocaust, Israel was, the Jewish people were like, you know, poised to really you know, 1950, the American Jewish Yearbook predicted that by the year 2000, there would be no more Orthodox Jews in America. Mm. Just the few that are left in the world will make their way over to an enclave in Israel. Right? And the Rav just felt that you know, that's quite arrogant.
Aaron Rothschild, who said that were not for Israel created in 48, Jewish people would have been just overwhelmed by the Holocaust and would have just disappeared.
Right. Yeah. Amazing. So now, for the first time in 2,700 years, there are more Jews living in Israel than outside of Israel.
Did that happen?
It's now. Yeah, oh, just this past year.
What does it mean halachic? There are some halachot.
Whether or not that fulfills, this is big in a few Shalmi sugyas, where it says, "Krosim dror l'chol yoshveha." Like whether that satisfies the needs of Chol Yoshveha, well, you know, I'm just, you know, maybe I'm counting some Ethiopians that are Russians. I don't know. I'm just saying that for me, Israel has to be a place where anyone who is persecuted because he's Jewish can escape to, even if that person is halachically not Jewish. I still think that Israel should be a place for that person. But, so I don't know if that's
just because you qualified yourself as chief rabbi.
That's why I said for me. I don't know if that's agrees with that. Finally, it's the last two is that Jewish blood isn't cheap. We're going to fight back, right? What Hamas did on October 7th could happen week after week, month after month, with much higher numbers for years on end, right? With no ability to fight back. Now we can fight back. We can defend ourselves. And finally, a refuge for all Jews. Right? The Rav lived at a time where, you know, do you know that between 1921 and 1923, 100,000 Ukrainian Jews were killed. Right? 100,000 in pogroms. And so those numbers, not a peep from anywhere. All right, so a refuge for Jews. Those are the six knocks. That's what knocking on the door So the Rav wrote this book to hope that the Jews who are comfortable in bed will hear the knocks. He said there were six of them. That's five. Okay, so that's what that is. All right, I went a little overboard. But okay, Yishkoyach, everyone. That was Shir Hashirim. I should give Shir Hashirim a lot more time. But the next one, we have to be Rus because of all this stuff that's going on. Okay, good night, everyone.